everybody, and welcome to episode 5 of the Good Take Podcast. We are live. It's nice and sunny where I am, and it looks nice and sunny where you are. How are you doing on this Wednesday? I don't think we're podcasting on a Wednesday. We usually like Friday, Sunday. How are you? It's the middle of the week. How's quarantine? How are you holding up through all the boredom?
I'm holding up okay. We wanted to do sort of a middle of the week episode because of some stuff coming up this weekend that we wanted to make sure to talk about. I'm doing okay. The putting green has arrived. So
I think it's
the same one that you have. So we got it.
For those who don't know, I Alexander's brother and I were commiserating about like how to stay active for with indoor sports during this time of staying indoors. And so when I mentioned that, he was all big on getting it. Have you made any putts yet? Or I don't know. What's your field goal percentage?
Ooh, I don't know. I hit like 6 or 7 out of 10 a couple days ago. And I was playing with it in the backyard, and I from off the green, I chipped one in. So that was exciting. That's the first time I've ever made a chip of any kind.
There you go. That
was a good start. Yeah.
Listen, man. Hopefully, this podcast is as good as your chipping skills. So on today's episode, we are going to get into sports coming back. We're going to talk about the NBA draft because there's some interesting things happening with that. Obviously, you have players like Denny and like players overseas who are starting to play some games again. I'm going to preview UFC 251 and the 3 title matches that are title fights, sorry, that are on the card. I personally cannot wait for Jorge Masvidal to claim what I believe is his. Well, we also have quite the I don't know, Alexander, do you ever think we would hear the phrase $500 million extension?
That is crazy. I mean, I thought when Albert Pujols got his $250 million contract a few years back, I thought that was where we were going to peak.
Exactly. Like, let alone in such a tight, let alone in a sport with such a tight salary cap. So we have that. And then we're going to have a fun final segment this time. It's titled Top 5. It's titled Top 5.
Yeah.
And we're not going to say what it is. I'm like fumbling over my words. But again. But before we get into all that, before we get into Mahomes, NBA draft, all that stuff, and UFC, we just want to first start off. We did want to address the comments made by Deshaun Jackson, Steven Jackson, in the last day, 2 days, 3 days. We don't want to get too political here. We know that's not why people listen to us or listen to sports podcasts, but we do just want to say that we condemn all forms of hatred, racism, bigotry, all that stuff, whether it's on Jews, Black people, what have you. Now, just as some context, like we are both Jewish, and so we probably feel a little more comfortable talking about this. The reason why we didn't address the Black Lives Matter thing right away is because we weren't, at least on this podcast, because I don't know if we felt as comfortable, but that's why we had someone like Wally Johnson on to ask him about it. Any kind of hatred is not something that we condone, and we vehemently denounce all of it, no matter who it's directed towards. So.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, and the struggles and the plight of one issue should never detract from the struggles and the plight of any other issue. And we want to just make sure that no matter who's saying it, that it's addressed in the proper way and talked about and acknowledged for what it is, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And so for everyone out there, love all and treat others the way you want to be treated, right? The golden rule.
I think
so. Yeah. With that, we can get into some sports. That's what Absolutely. We're here for. Okay. So in the last few days, there's been quite a lot of noise about sports coming back. Just this afternoon, the Ivy League just canceled its fall league sports. You have, players like Mike Trout. I mean, look, when the best player in your sport, speaks, like you're going to listen, whether that's Steph, even though everyone's with LeBron, it's true. Or whoever, it can be even someone like a Sidney Crosby, whoever.
Yep.
If someone, if a player of that stature speaks, like you're going to listen. And so Mike Trout expressed some skepticism. Oh boy. Expressed some skepticism, as did Buster Posey and many others. So Alexander, what are your thoughts about over or under a week and a half before the baseball season gets canceled again? What do you think?
I would say over, but not by a lot. I mean, it's not just them. It goes across these sports leagues. I think you see just so many issues that everyone's kind of just going ahead without really thinking about it. One thing I will say here, this is my pop culture nerdiness coming through here.
Right.
In the like sort of the context of sports coming back, a lot of people have been invoking that line from Jurassic Park. You thought so much about whether or not you could that you didn't stop to think about whether or not you should. You know what I'm talking about?
I do recall.
Yeah. So that line has been invoked, but I think actually the better explanation for what's going on here comes from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, a great TV show. And I wrote it down. I want to read it to you now, what I think it is. We immediately escalate everything to a 10. Somebody comes in with some preposterous plan or idea. Then all of a sudden, everyone's on the gas. Nobody's on the brakes. Nobody's thinking. Everyone's just talking over each other with one idiotic idea after another. Until finally, we find ourselves in a situation where we've broken into somebody's house and the homeowner is home. Obviously, that last sentence just kind of relates to what was going on in that episode. But I think if you just take that last sentence and change it to something about a coronavirus outbreak at a hotel in Orlando, like, you're not too far off from what's happening. This just seems to be a situation where everybody is just going ahead and with not really thinking about what might happen. And I feel like we're just headed into a situation where someone in one of the leagues or multiple leagues is going to test positive, and we're just going to see the whole operation blow up.
Yeah, so I know what I've heard from Adam Silver, reportedly, is that they do a plan in place in case, like, a few guys test positive. I think once it becomes, you know, in mass, when so many people test positive, and then they, like, don't have any idea about where to track, you know, where the virus came from. Because, then, I mean, if you don't know where it came from, you can't stop it. Then once that happens and it gets out of hand, they'll be done. I think if they just get one or two or a few, I think they'll be fine. Baseball, man, there's no bubble, so they're going to go home and interact with people. I mean, again, they're not all just going to stay at home. Like, it's much harder to track versus with the NBA, you have everyone in one, or hopefully, or I guess the NBA is using a wishful thinking to have everyone in the same bubble. Baseball doesn't have that luxury, and, you know, neither does, you know, hockey's going to have it, kind of. It's not, I don't know, it's what basketball is doing is much more feasible than baseball.
Mm-hmm. I would, and also going off that with hockey, I do think I have more hope for hockey than some of the other ones because they're doing it in Canada, you know, they're having the hub cities of Toronto and Edmonton, Canada's handled the virus and brought it down more successfully than the US. So when you factor that in, I think it's safer to play up there and have something up there. But even then, I think there's risk of, you know, just sort of a couple positive tests, and then that leads to an outbreak within the league, and that throws everything off.
But having a hub city, I don't know. It's especially having 24 teams for that long. It's really. I don't know. I think the NBA did it the best. Like, from all the, you know, epidemiologists and experts. Because listen, I didn't get better than a C- in any science class I ever took in high school, so I'm not the expert on this.
Right.
But from every epidemiologist and whatever ologist you want to listen to, they've said that the NBA has done the best that they can. They're making lemonade out of lemons. This is the most that they can do. I mean, I saw a YouTube clip this morning. Malika Andrews, ESPN reporter, was being interviewed on Good Morning America, and she held up her hand. She was like, "Yeah, like, they have, you know, this, like, wristband and this thing on our finger that's, like, it'll light up blue if we have a good temperature, and green if we might be sick, and then they'll take a look at us. And every time we walk into an arena, facility, practice game, whatever, you know, it's going to be, it's going to light up, or it's going to be, somehow it's going to test you. And then once you get it, like, you put it in some app, or, like, you connect it to some app." It's clearly, like, it's way, this stuff's way over my head, but the NBA has gone to serious lengths to make sure that both, I mean, staff, reporters, players are going to be safe to the best they can. And then, look, because the Disney employees are not employees of the NBA, the NBA can't force them to stay in the bubble. But even then, making them socially distanced, I think the NBA is going to go off with very few hitches. I won't say without a hitch, but I think they'll go off pretty smoothly. So, mm-hmm. All right. Do you have any more thoughts on this, or? Should we, go ahead.
I just have a couple of things. Sure. Number one is I'm sort of going off what you said about epidemiologists and all that stuff. You know, Dr. Fauci was, like, the leader on all this stuff. He's come out and he said he likes the NBA plan. So that's just something, another thing to consider. But it's not just the NBA. Well, I mean, the NHL, the MLB, the MLS tournament, which is just about to start up, the WNBA. the NWSL, you know, all these leagues that are starting up, I think still have risks. Things are going to blow up. Even in the NBA, with all the stuff you said, there is still a chance it can go wrong. I mean, we know so little about this virus, and we're doing the best we can, but sports wise, but it's still not a guarantee. And look, I want sports to come back as badly as anybody. I mean, I really hope that these plans work perfectly. I mean, I don't want them to fail at all. I mean, if I'm rooting for them to succeed, and if they work and the whole thing goes off perfectly, I will be watching and rooting like a fan and an analyst, and hopefully it's all good. But I just think there's just so much health risk involved. I think you have to consider, is it going to get shut it down at some point? Should we just prepare for 2021?
Yeah, and again, I hear you, and it's still, we can't ignore the fact that the money plays, and especially like we've talked about on previous episodes, which everyone should go listen to and check out, by the way. But we have talked about, you know, the potential for the CBA just to get ripped up in the NBA if the season gets canceled, and how much leverage and how much money that might end up costing the players. And again, just obviously the whole social unrest thing and how to, you know, keep that movement, that critical movement going throughout all of this. So the world is a messy place, man. There's just so much crap going on right now, as we've mentioned so far on this episode. So there's so much going on. Me personally, I don't know. I think some semblance of normalcy, it's just going to be good for everyone's, I don't know, just for everyone's soul. And look, to me, I don't know, doing it as safe as you can, it's not going to be perfect. I think what the NBA is doing is, you know, my mom always has a saying, she's like, you know, 70s, I want you to do the best that you can, even when she knew I was going to like do crappy on some like science test, you know. I think the NBA is doing the best they can, and I don't think there's any major pitfalls that could cause dangerous harm. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean the thing that gives me kind of the most hope about that is the thing you mentioned about like the rings and all the sort of stuff that actively kind of alerts.
They should be able to catch it exactly quickly.
Yeah, that's not even like massive testing. That's just sort of more, that goes to contact tracing. So
it's contact tracing, but it also should hopefully help them catch it earlier on. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you get a daily like finger check, I mean, by the way, how much stuff do you have to pack? If you're like a reporter, how much like are you packing for like a 3-month stay in like Disney World? Like,
yeah, I know.
That's so crazy.
Now, I would love to talk to somebody who's down there and try to.
So I believe. You know what, we'll try, and if people want to, you know, spread our podcast around, like, please do. I believe there was 10 reporters who got there. I think reporters applied, and there was 10. I think the NBA gave 10 spots is what I was reading. We'll try, and that'd be really fun. I mean, I'm sure they'll have a lot of downtime. So I would love to, you know, see what it's like. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they can't go on rides. Like, they're literally, I mean, I guess they have pools. I'm sure they'll have buffets, but it's pretty much, you know,
it's pretty much just staying in the complex. So
it's it's kind of just like a summer camp. You're on the property and that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on from that, sticking with basketball though, the NBA draft is now, there's now a date for it. It is on October 17th. Yeah. 21st. Okay. 25th. Okay. Between October 15th and October 31st, the second half of October. See, this is what happens when I don't write these things down. Okay. Obviously, that the lottery is actually coming up soon in like 6 weeks on August 25th. And like we mentioned earlier, you have players like Avdija, Leandro Balmaro, who are starting to come back and play their international games. So we're not going to do a mock draft because, again, the lottery order isn't set, but we are going to discuss players we like, don't like, overrated, underrated, all that type of stuff, and where we think some of the best fits are for the top players. So, Alexander, why don't you take it away first?
Well, I think we have to start by saying there's no standout player in this draft. You know, everyone has huge red flags or massive bust potential or a fairly low ceiling. You know, there's no Zion Williamson. There is no clear top guy. This is the guy who's getting picked first no matter what. It's not that kind of situation this year. My personal favorite player in the draft is Deni Avdija. But like I'm even
– nice.
Because I think he's very, very dependable, pretty consistent. But I'm not like over the moon on him either. I think he's got like he's a high floor, low ceiling kind of guy. Like he's not super likely to bust, but he's not also one of the less likely to become like a, to turn into a superstar out of this draft. So that's kind of my initial take on sort of the top. Yeah. And everybody else, you know, I think LaMelo Ball has a high ceiling and a low floor.
Have you seen LaMelo's shooting percentages? I mean, holy yeah. crap. Everyone's yeah, no, like, yeah. oh, but he's sees the floor. Listen, man, if you see, like, if you can't shoot, like, we've seen with Ben Simmons, like, all-star, great player, but his game has such a ceiling because he can't shoot. Like, but if Ben Simmons stays the way he is, he will never be the best player on a title team. Mm-hmm. Continue, I cut you off.
Yeah, I mean, I think sort of some of the same things about LaMelo Ball apply to Anthony Edwards. I think that James Wiseman is underdeveloped. I mean, you keep going down the list, like, it's a lot of guys with a lot of question marks and issues where I don't see like a standout player.
Yeah. So what I find interesting is, so, and the consensus is obviously that this draft is, you know, one of the weaker ones, but the last time there was a quote unquote weak draft in 2013, you had CJ McCollum drafted all-star. You had Oladipo drafted all-star. And then you had a man by the name of Giannis Antetokounmpo drafted at 15. So that's three all-stars and an MVP right there. Two all-stars plus a third one who was an MVP. So there's going to be a hidden gem in here somewhere, and the key is sort of figuring out who it is. So I have a few thoughts. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say is all three, other than Oladipo, the other two you named were drafted later in the lottery or even out, or and Giannis
was 15th.
Right. Exactly. So it's – so like and Oladipo was second overall, so that's a little bit different. But what a lack of a standout player means is that often means that the best player will be found farther down.
Yeah, so agreed. I think for me, I have a few thoughts. So I really like Denny too. I think I see him as like a borderline all-star, like Danilo Gallinari type. That has me a little worried because so people are comparing him to Luka, and that's just like lunacy. I mean, Luka was the MVP of the EuroLeague. In the EuroLeague, Denny's at, like, shooting under 30% from three. Up until recently, he was averaging like 4 points a game, something like that. So he's not the same. Denny's handle also isn't quite as good. He's not quite as good at creating offense for himself. Not as quite as proficient in isolation. But he's developing. He's only 19. He's killed it in the Israeli league. He's going to be a good NBA player, I think. In terms of like highest ceiling, I actually really like Anthony Edwards. I think, I don't know, his sort of success last year or lack thereof, or I don't know, I guess his overall inconsistency was because of the role he was asked to play. Again, if people can look up Jaylen Brown, who played at Cal right near us. Jaylen Brown's percentages were very similar. Jaylen Brown's last year in college at Cal, his percentages were very similar to Edwards this year. And that's because, you know, they didn't have teammates around him, so they were forced to carry a big role than they were otherwise sort of ready for. I think if they were a third or a fourth option, like Anthony Edwards might be on the Warriors, I think that he could sort of develop and into a, you know, a more selective player, take fewer bad shots, and actually sort of learn some IQ, develop his defense, because he wouldn't have to carry the entire offensive burden. Again, asking a teenager to carry, you know, an entire offensive burden, you know, with a bunch of players who don't belong on the same floor with him, you know, you're going to end up with him playing hero ball. Now, if you have someone like, you know, even like a Trae Young, let alone a Steph Curry or a Klay Thompson on your team, I think he's much more likely to be deferential and be looking to make the right play, which I think over time will gain maturity. So those are my thoughts on him. As for you mentioned, I just want to say a quick note about Wiseman. I would be, this is maybe a hot take, I would be really surprised if he was a top five pick. I don't see teams spending that kind of money on a center right now. I think everyone wants a wing. Hell, honestly, even a guard who can just guard multiple positions, spending that kind of money on James Wiseman, especially when there's going to be, you know, players like maybe Marc Gasol and Aaron Baines, you might be able to sign for cheaper, especially when there's so much unknown on Wiseman. I think that Okongwu and Wiseman are both going to fall outside of the top five. So maybe that's a hot take, but.
Yeah. Do you have any sort of, You were talking about like the diamonds in the rough of, you know, McCollum and Giannis and things like that. Do you see anybody sort of along those lines in this draft?
So it's funny because I feel like Sadiq Bey is no longer a diamond in the rough because he's like everyone's underrated guy. So he's not as sexy to say now. But if you guys I really like Devin Vassell. He shot over 40% from three. can guard multiple positions. He can also create his own shot a little bit. He has a nice pull-up game. He's not a total robot on offense. So I like him. Again, he shoots well from beyond the arc. Also, someone like Cassius Stanley, who made 50% of his corner threes at Duke last year, really hard worker. I saw an interview that he did that he wants, his goal is to be a commissioner of the NBA one day, let alone, you know, the best player, MVP, and all that stuff. So really intelligent guy. So I would love him to get another wing, maybe or early second round. And then I also love Elijah Hughes from Syracuse. And I see a lot of, I don't know, he reminds me a little bit of like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander a little bit. Just quick, explosive, underrated athlete. And I haven't really seen him in the top 20 even in a lot of drafts. Oh, also Aaron Tillman from Michigan State, who's 23 from Michigan State, who we know the Warriors have gone that road before. So I would not mind him if the Warriors, if he was able to fall in the second round to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I like him. Yeah.
Do you have predictions? My personal prediction is that the number one overall pick will be Anthony Edwards. That's where I think it'll go right now. I'm not saying it should be.
It depends who wins the lottery.
But sort of in my mock draft, I think that's the most kind of, obviously it's a little bit hard to tell based on who gets the number one overall pick. But I think I think that's the most likely situation. Do you have ideas on that?
Well, I don't know. I think for Anthony Edwards, I think the Knicks, I don't know. Part of me thinks fate might just have the Knicks get the number one pick the year after Zion just to like mess with them. I think that's very possible. If the Knicks get the number one pick, there's no way they're not taking LaMelo Ball. It's just the most New York Knicks thing. It's the most New York Knicks thing to do, which is why, man, if they're 4, 5, 6, and if I'm the Warriors or Cavs, like 1, 2, or Timberwolves at 3, like, I don't know. I'd be looking to trade back with the Knicks because I think they're going to be really desperate to get a quote-unquote star to kind of spark that city. So that's my general thing. But I would say Anthony Edwards is probably the odds on favorite. Again, I don't see why you would pick someone who played 3 college games first overall in the draft when he hasn't. There's no legitimate hype, you know, that's, you know, he's a Kobe or LeBron coming out of high school or Kevin Garnett. And again, I like Okongwu. To me, he's a bigger, more athletic version of Kevon Looney. He's going to be a really good pro, but he's not a high ceiling guy, which if you're picking in like the top 3, like you want to pick a top, and I get there probably isn't that many stars in this draft, but if you're picking at number 1, you don't want to go with like a save pick. Like that's not like trade back and then get that. So again, there's also, I don't know, there's going to be centers again who are going to be better than Okongwu for the next 3 years, 5 years, who you can pick up for cheaper than you would if you drafted him first. Long tangents, but you know, anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was agreeing with you. You have centers. I think if you're teams that are trying to win, it's hard to draft and develop centers, especially when they're still an important part of the game, becoming less an important part of the game in these days where, you know, it's more about wings and perimeter players who can guard multiple positions and shoot and drive and all these sorts of things so the stuff that centers don't really offer you, it makes it harder to get that argument to spending money on them.
Agreed. And I mean, especially, I mean, I don't know that James Wiseman is going to be like Clint Capella, but there's no evidence that he's going to be Chris Bosh either, although some have made that comparison. And again, even if he's not able to shoot for 2 or 3 years, like, I'm sorry, that like that's, especially if I'm a team like the Warriors, like, man, if you can't shoot in this league, you're gonna hold your team's offense back. You just are. You have to be able to oppose some threat, keep the opposing defense at least somewhat honest. Mm-hmm. So, all right, yeah, any underrated guys for you? Or should we?
Let me think about that. Cole Anthony from North Carolina, okay. I think could be a player. The guy from Memphis, Precious.
Achiuwa.
Yes, exactly. Thank you for helping me out with that. I think he
reminds me of Kenneth Fareed.
Mm-hmm. You know. Yeah, I think he could fall a little bit, but also become a really good impact player. And then, obviously, you said Sadiq Bey and how he's kind of rising up, and I sort of agree with your analysis on that. And then someone who's a little bit higher up on draft board that doesn't get talked about as much, but someone I really like, Isaac Okoro from Auburn. I think, you know, might go like 7th or 8th or something, but I think at the potential has like a very NBA ready game.
I wouldn't bet against, like, I don't know, there's a small chance I think that he could end up being the best player in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt.
Yeah, for sure. Actually,
like, his defense, his jumper looks good, even though it's not, his percentages suck so far. But like, he's also a really good cutter, which, again, fits well in the Warriors offense. And he doesn't need the ball to succeed. He doesn't need the ball to at least be productive on offense.
Yeah.
Again, this is all so much about, like, you know, situation, as most draft picks are. Like, again, if Zion's going to succeed no matter where he goes, John Morant's going to succeed wherever he goes. For the 95-98% of players, you know, situation and circumstance matters. And so I think it depends, you know, where these guys go, you know, is going to determine a lot of their success. So, which, again, totally, that's the case almost every year. Although this year it sure seems like that there's a lot more question marks surrounding this year's draft. Okay. Speaking of question marks, Alexander, who is going to win the main event for UFC 251 this Saturday evening?
That's a good question.
Well, hold me in suspense, though. Give me a little, like, you know. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, you know, it's going to be Kamaru Usman against Jorge Masvidal. It looked like it was going to be Usman versus Gilbert Burns originally, but Burns tested positive for COVID, had to pull out, so they brought in Masvidal as a replacement at the last minute. My pick personally is Usman, but I'm not super confident in that. You're a bigger UFC fan than I am, so I'm going to kind of let you take the lead on this one. I just have a sort of a question for you, which is,
do you think
Usman has an advantage because Masvidal is coming in so late, or do you think maybe Masvidal has an advantage because Usman was preparing for a different fighter? What do you sort of make of?
Yeah, so what's interesting is the Gilbert fight didn't get announced until, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago, so I think Masvidal was training. And then according to Dustin Poirier, who's one of his training partners, apparently he was still training just in case this happened, which, again, honestly, at this point, all fighters should be training in case people fall out, because with COVID, you just never know. To me, his conditioning is going to be fine. This is also, like, Masvidal, he was a run-of-the-mill guy up until about a year ago, and then he's really popped as one of the biggest stars in the sport. This is the first time he's going to fight for about, since he joined the UFC in 2013, so 7 years ago. I really like him. I believe his last four fights, he's been a 2-1 underdog, and he's won all of them, maybe his last three. Literally on the way to Abu Dhabi from Vegas, him and his team stopped for pizza. So in Italy, they stopped and got Italian pizza so his team could eat. Like, he's kind of a crazy dude, like, in a good way.
Uh-huh.
I really like him. Not to get too, you know, nerdy here, but his stand-up game is really good. He can wrestle. Kamaru is a really powerful puncher. But I think if Jorge can withstand that, because he's a tough dude. From Florida, grew up with Dwayne Johnson, actually. It's from the same neighborhood.
Okay.
I think if he can, like, withstand the early onslaught, I actually like his chances to win probably, like, third or fourth round.
Okay. Also, something I think that can be pointed out is, like, the last time that Masvidal fought someone who fights in Usman style was against Ben Askren, and that was the one where he took a flying knee in, like, 2 seconds
to
knock out. And it wasn't even really, I mean, I've seen that fight. It wasn't even really 5 seconds. It was more like 2 or 3. And the 5 was just when the ref called it, because, like, Askren was out the moment that knee hit his head. So.
Oh, yeah. So I just want to say, too, I mean, Usman has won 15 fights in a row.
Yeah.
His last fight against Colby Covington was, like, incredible. One of my favorite fights of all time. And then, yeah, I mean, his win over Covington was actually the first time that he hadn't gone the distance. And 5, and only the second and 10. So we'll see. I mean, Usman has a lot of stamina too. I think one thing that's guaranteed for sure is that it's not, you know, this is not going to be like a Ronda Rousey 10 second. Like, this is going to be a hell of a show. And then, not to mention, I mean, we don't want to leave out, you know, Peter Yan versus Jose Aldo to get for the belt that Henry Cejudo, for the 135 pound belt that Henry Cejudo vacated. That's going to be an incredible fight. Both those guys are super quick and really skilled. And then, of course, you have Max Holloway, one of my favorite guys in MMA, too. So, again, you have 3 title fights on a UFC card. This is probably going to be the best card of the year. Especially, I mean, it's always a fun card, but especially with no sports, it's going to be extra, extra exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Do you have picks for the other 2 fights on the card?
So, I'm picking Jan Holloway and Masvidal.
So okay.
Don't hold me to them.
Okay.
So we'll see. How about you?
I think I'm going Holloway. I'm going Aldo, and I'm going Usman. Those are my picks. Yeah.
Listen, you don't have to be an expert. This is all, you know, we're kicking it on a sports podcast. There's no, you know.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I'm fairly new to it and kind of learning.
I'm not an expert on it either, but, you know, we're just like, you know, this is what a podcast is for, just to, you know, play around and have fun. And speaking around of playing around and having fun, Patrick Mahomes does that quite effortlessly.
Now he's got a lot of money to play around with. So
exactly. There you go. He's gonna be playing around effortlessly, but now he's gonna be getting paid a whole lot of money to do it. What was your first reaction when you first saw the number? Because I saw like Nick Wright had said like, oh, pay him like you know, $225 million extension, you know, just cash him out, sign him for a while. And then I saw like Adam Schefter, you know, tweeted like, oh, it's well over $400 million. I was like, whoa, like that's probably 400, like no way. Then I was like, okay, 400, like, wow, okay. And then when the number came out, I mean, Bleacher Report, I got the notification on my phone. It was literally in all caps. I was like, what the heck? Like, what was your first reaction when you saw $500 million effing dollars? Like, it's just so crazy. He's played 2 years in the league, 2 years. Neither of us are arguing. I mean, he obviously deserves it. It's just crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, When you put in the, I mean, $500 million is obviously an insane amount of money any way you spin it. When you put it in the context of $500 million, it gets that much crazier. If you break that down, that's $96 a minute for the rest of his contract through 2031, when it'll be 36 years old. So, I mean,
is that like a minute of football minute, or like a minute, like in the like every minute of every day?
I think every minute of every day, but I'm not sure. I'll have to look at it and get the calculator out.
Okay. So he'd have like $4,000 then if he was on this podcast with us.
Yeah. So Patrick Mahomes, if you're listening, we're here for you. it's insane the amount of money that gets thrown around these days, and it makes you think about, you know, other players and other quarterbacks who are, you know, in extension negotiations and are talking about that sort of stuff. Dak is obviously the one who immediately comes to mind.
Because usually when there's a big contract signed, people are just like, oh, it's going to reset the market. The next player is going to ask for more. Obviously, this is the case. No one's topping this contract,
right,
either in years or in money. So for the folks out there saying, oh, Dak's now going to ask for money, or Lamar's, I love Lamar and I like Dak. Neither one of them are Mahomes. That said, I do think both of them deserve extensions. I mean, obviously, Dak just got signed to the franchise tag. Not just, but he got signed to the franchise tag. I don't know. Is his extension going to be – I mean, is it going to happen before the season? I mean, gosh, I mean, I swear the Cowboys just – Jerry Jones, I mean, they've said it. They like being in the headlines on purpose, but I'm starting to think that Dak is not going to be a Dallas Cowboy after this upcoming season if it happens.
I do think that Dak will get the extension. Mike McCarthy is a very offensive-minded, quarterback-minded coach coming in to sort of shake things up there. I've read a couple of different things from Dallas area, sort of writers and Cowboys insiders who do think that the extension will happen by the deadline. And it will obviously be for less money than Mahomes. You know, I mean, as absurd as kind of the money is that's going around these days and sort of players who may or may not deserve it, you know, getting these insane guaranteed money contracts, I don't think that Mahomes' money is something that's going to be topped anytime soon. What I do think will happen is it'll be more than Jared Goff's, Jared Goff was number one, now he's number two with the Mahomes contract. Yeah. I do think Dak will get more than Goff got. But
yeah, I mean, Dak's not going to accept a contract that's less, so he's going to have to, or else. Who do you think is a better quarterback, by the way, between those two?
Between Dak and Jared Goff?
Yeah.
Probably Dak.
Okay, interesting.
What do you think?
I would probably go with Goff, to be honest.
Okay.
I think Dak's more consistent, but I think in terms of at their best, Goff is better. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I mean, Goff's also had a great supporting cast, as has Dak, and Dak's going to have a better supporting cast this year. But especially, I don't know, the Cowboys are just managed like much – they're they manage their team much better. I mean, the Rams have just too many big contracts.
They were
basketball team just paying a few stars, and like that's not how it works.
Yeah, I think part of the thing is that the Rams were determined to make like just like a big splash in a new city when they relocated,
and especially Los Angeles.
Yeah, exactly, and like and especially in LA, where you know the football market revolves around college football, and it's hard to draw fans to NFL games. And you saw the Rams games at the Coliseum when it would be like 70% visiting fans, and they were desperate, you know, to bring Ndamukong Suh and Dante Fowler and all these players to.
Yeah, except you know what though, the Chargers made it look like Cameron Indoor Stadium. So.
What?
I said the Chargers though made the Rams look like Cameron Indoor Stadium.
That's true. I mean, because they were playing in at the Galaxy's field, and you know with like a 30,000 capacity in a small stadium league, and now they're moving into the shared stadium in Inglewood. So.
Listen, man, I why anyone would like advocate to be the Clippers, I just don't. That's a whole nother topic for a whole nother day. So yeah, we mentioned Dak, we talked about Goff a little bit, Mahomes. What about Lamar? What's his contract situation gonna be like? I feel like he's gonna get a little bit of the treatment that Steph got after his 2016 season. Everyone's gonna be like, oh, he's so underrated. But then no one's gonna take him seriously as a top player again because he had a bad postseason, or a bad postseason game. I don't know how much money is he going to get signed to. It's going to be a fascinating case because we still don't even know if his career is going to have longevity attached to it.
Yeah, right. I mean, and he's still young, and it looks like the Ravens are still going to be really good next year. And he's got, you know, he's got plenty more chances to figure it all out. How old is he? I mean, he's younger than Mahomes, right?
Well, so he's been in the league 2 years also.
Okay.
Actually, Mahomes has been in the league 3 years, but he's played for two. Lamar drafted, sat behind Flacco for half a year, played half a year, the second half of the year, and then this was his first full season.
Yeah, so with the point being that he's still very young, he's still got a lot of opportunities to make his impact and become like a really top-level player. And become not just a great regular season player, but also a winner. And I do think that that will sort of develop over time. That, you know, he'll start winning games in the postseason, and I do think he'll be a Raven for a while.
Nice. Yeah, I'm honestly fascinated to see. I mean, I'm sure no one's going to tie Mahomes' contract, but I do think it might drag like the Overton window a little bit. Again, there's gonna be a lot of, you know, like interesting negotiations. How many let's say over or under, before we move on to our last segment, over or under 1.5 Super Bowls that the Chiefs are gonna win during Mahomes' contract? And remember, it's actually a 12-year contract because they extended it. They put on 10 years to the two he has remaining. So the 12 years, over or under 1.5 Super Bowls. Actually, over or under 2.5 Super Bowls.
Let's man up. When you said 1.5, that was gonna be a much easier call. Now that you've bumped up the number,
I realized midway through my sentence, I was like, let's make it tougher.
Mm-hmm. You mean so 2.5 more is the so the
1.5 over or under? Yeah, over or under.
I would say over. I go probably 3. I think the Chiefs are going to be. You know, they committed all this money. They have to keep them happy, and so they're going to constantly surround them with, you know, good receivers, good defense. They're going to do everything in their power to.
My bad.
They're just going to do everything in this power to keep this team a Super Bowl contender every single year, whatever that ends up meaning for salary cap or anything. They now that they committed all this money to Mahomes, they have to treat it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated to see having a quarter of your salary cap committed to one guy is going to be really. I mean, no one's ever built a team that way before, but also no one's probably ever had a player as talented as not as great yet, but purely as talented as Mahomes. So it's going to be fascinating. And then, you know, once, you know, if Andy Reid retires in a few years, or, you know, once Tyreek Hill declines because he's not going to be that fast forever. But, you know, I'm curious. I would have to go under. I mean, again, people forget how hard a Super Bowl is to win. Again, the Chiefs, according to you, the Chiefs got lucky in the Super Bowl a little bit. They shouldn't have won. And they had to make 3 huge comebacks just to eke out one. I mean, again, I know Mahomes is great. It is really hard just to win one. And so I think winning three is a little bit too much to ask, even over 12 years. And again, Dan Marino made the Super Bowl in the second year and never made it back. So you never know. It's just like the OKC Thunder in the 2012 finals. You never know if or when a team's going to come back. And we sort of take it for granted that the Chiefs will. But again, as we saw with Mahomes' knee injury, things can change fast. So I usually sort of venture away from promises and guarantees. Mm-hmm. Okay, for our final segment on this Wednesday afternoon, we are going to do what we like to call a top fives. So today for our top fives, Alexander or Alex, sorry, what would you? I'm doing my best, man. For our top fives today, what are we going to be top fiving?
Well, in honor of Mahomes' new contract, which obviously was a reaction to his incredible first two full seasons, I guess, in the league. You know, he played three, but really only been a key player for two of those seasons. We're doing our picks for the top five two-year starts in sports history. We'll just go. We'll each give our number five. Then we'll each give our number four and discuss them along the way.
Did you want to do 5-1 or alternate 5-4-5-5?
We'll alternate when just we'll alternate, go 5-5-4-4. Yeah. Okay. Who wants to go first?
Eeny, meeny, miny, me. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Number five, I have Tim Duncan. Made an All-NBA first team both of his first 2 years, a rookie of the year, a rookie first team. Won an All-Star game, and then he also, again, if you won this in your first 2 years and then didn't get injured like Magic Johnson did in his second year, if you won a Finals MVP the way Tim Duncan did, I just hold that in such high regard. You know, perform that well on the biggest stage is really just impressive to me. And then before I go to number four, I also want to give two honorable mentions to both Magic, who I mentioned, who missed half of his second year because of a knee injury, and then Mike Trout, who should have won an MVP both of his first years, but did not because of Miguel Cabrera, who was also deserving. But okay, what's your number five?
My number five is Jim Brown. He won MVP in his rookie year, leading the league in both rushing yards and touchdowns, and then did the same thing again next year, MVP, rushing yards leader, and in the second year led the league in total touchdowns, not just rushing touchdowns. And in the rushing yards and rushing TDs, me absolutely lapped the field. Like 1,527 rushing yards. That was when the season was 12 games long. And you average that out per game. That's nuts. And then he had 17 total touchdowns that season. I think the next highest person had like 8 or something. And it got to the point where just the rest of the NFL like sort of wasn't prepared to handle him. I also have a couple honorable mentions. My honorable mentions are Ichiro Suzuki. He was league MVP as a rookie in 2001. 242 hits. You want to know the only other player after 1930 with more hits than that in a year? Do you know who it is?
I do not.
It's Ichiro Suzuki in 2004.
There it is.
And then
how did he do in his second year though?
Second year, 208 hits, batted .321, Gold Glove winner, fourth in the American League in stolen bases. The only reason I don't have him in my top five is because he came from playing professionally in Japan, so it wasn't like a sort of a 2 year like rookie year kind of start in like the.
Yeah, he came in his like late 20s. Yeah, mm-hmm. He was already yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the other honorable mention on my list is one of my all time favorite players, Tim Lincecum, who won the Cy Young Award in each of his first two full seasons. His record was 33-12. His ERA was 2.55, over 500 strikeouts. I would argue that he didn't deserve the second Cy Young Award.
You think Adam Wainwright?
Adam Wainwright. Quick story about that, actually, if yeah. I can.
Funny you mentioned him once again.
Every summer, with the exception of this year, my family goes on vacation to Maine, and there's this baseball card store up in Maine. There was that was owned by Chris Carpenter's uncle.
And oh wow.
And the year after Lincecum won the second Cy Young, when we were up there, we visited the store, and Chris Carpenter's uncle told us that Tim Lincecum had texted both Chris Carpenter and Adam Wainwright saying, "You guys deserve that more than I did." And I agree. I think Adam Wainwright should have won. Adam Wainwright actually got more first place votes But Tim Lincecum got more of the sort of farther down ballot votes and picked up the award. And that's kind of the reason I didn't put him in the top five was that I felt like the second signing award.
Well, so I guess you had some insider info that I didn't have.
Yeah.
Because next on my list was Tim Lincecum.
There you go.
Wow. Okay. Well, maybe I wish I would have known that info, but that's okay. Again, only player ever to win the Cy Young, in his first two. In his first two seasons. I think he's unique, obviously, because the rest of his career was mediocre and then terrible. He was so – just like the electricity that he just oozed off of him, that he oozed off of himself, rather, was just so – was unlike anything I've ever seen from a pitcher. Again, we were talking last night as we were preparing for this podcast. I mean, I thought outside of Stephen Clay that no Bay Area athlete has gotten – as much love as he has during our lifetime. And I'm sure people might listen to me now and be like, Tim Lincecum, like, what did, by this point, his name is probably so far forgotten in the pantheon or in the depths of baseball history. You know, I'm sure a lot of East Coast fans might even forget how good he was. But man, I mean, he was on a Sports Illustrated cover, you know, about how, you know, there was all this stuff about how he could throw 98 miles an hour, even though we had like such a huge leg kick. His body had such a torque to it, and man, I'm not even a Giants fan like you are. Let's go Oakland, but I could not help but root for that guy. He's one of the most exciting athletes I've ever watched. So, and like I said, to win to be the best pitcher in baseball, your first two full seasons is like really unprecedented, and only one guy is Fernando Valenzuela ever won as a rookie. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What did I say?
I think you said Venezuela. It's Valenzuela.
Sorry, Valenzuela.
Yeah.
See, this is my – folks, make sure your handwriting is neat when you take notes. Anyways.
For number four, I'm actually going with someone who was on your honorable mention list. I am going with Mike Trout. Okay. Number four. Nearly won AL MVP as a rookie. Arguably deserved it. Probably would have won it if Miguel Cabrera hadn't put up a triple crown season. Yeah. And then finished second behind Miguel Cabrera the following year. Well, his wins above replacement or his WAR was higher both seasons. I mean, across his first two seasons, I'll just give you the numbers: batted .324, 57 homers, 180 RBIs, 82 stolen bases, 238 runs scored, and his WAR across those two seasons was 19.4. Which, if you don't know WAR, that's absurd. Like that is. Two MVP caliber seasons. I mean, back to back. That's. I mean, and those are his first two.
I agree. He should have won the award both years.
He should probably be like a 5 or 6 time MVP.
Oh my gosh! If he's coming in the top two every year except for one, and that was when he broke his hand. I mean, honestly, other than the Josh Donaldson year, and probably well. You could argue that Mookie should have won it last year, but maybe with the exception of two or three. I mean, I agree. He's deserved it almost every year. But I don't know because he didn't actually win the awards. I was like, man, I don't have a collection to point to. But I you're not wrong. I can't say that you're wrong either.
Mm-hmm. Who do you have at number three?
I'm at number three. Wait, really quick before you get to three, I wanted to ask you. Do you view the home Miguel Cabrera winning the MVP because of the Triple Crown a little bit similar to Russell Westbrook's? The voters just voting for him, well, because we haven't seen this in so long, we have to vote for him to win MVP. Are they a little similar? I mean, I think
there's an argument there. I also think that in 2012, since the Tigers had a much better season than the Angels, and Miguel Cabrera was such a huge part of that, I think there's an argument to be made in his favor there as well.
Because they won. Okay. But there's some overlap, though.
Yeah.
I think. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Sure. At my number three spot, I have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Has an MVP, a title, a finals MVP. By the way, he is the longest time in between finals MVPs. Quick little side note. He won his first in 71, his second year. And then he won his second one in 1985, which is pretty crazy. Everyone talks about LeBron's longevity, but like... Kareem's is doesn't get talked about enough. Was an All-Star both years, Rookie of the Year. He made the All-Defensive team both times. all defensive second team both times, a rookie of the year, all rookie first team, and he was the NBA scoring champion in the second year, which is extraordinarily impressive to be that polished coming out of college, which I just want to say one more thing before I pass the baton to you. The fact that he was in college for 4 years, and again, they won at UCLA. UCLA, right?
Yeah,
UCLA. He did come out a much more ready prospect. So I wish more players would do that. But anyways, who is your number three?
My number three is I'm turning away from team sports and I'm going with Tiger Woods. Within a year of turning pro, he'd won three PGA events. He'd won the 1997 Masters, which is one of the most dominant performances ever in a major. He was Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year, and he already reached the number one world ranking by the time he was 21. And then year two wasn't quite as strong, only won one PGA event, but it was still really good. I mean, just on the strength of his first year alone, I mean, that is as good a sort of rookie season, if you will, as anyone's ever had. I mean, on that alone, he deserves to be on this list, which I think shows you how amazing that first year was for him.
I mean, not even just his winning, but like the way he won and his like, sort of the fashion like, with which he went about it. I can't hate on that. What were the majors that he won? Do you ever run down?
In his first 2 years, his only major win was the Masters. But it was just such a dominant performance, and he just kind of swept everybody away that it got everybody's attention.
He won by like 8 or 9 strokes, if I recall, right?
I think more than that. I think it was 12.
It was 12. I don't remember, but because we were young, but I do recall watching and reading about how we crushed everybody. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, I should have. Really quick, how's your golf game going, by the way?
It's getting better. Yeah. I'm still not all the way there yet, but just sort of little bits and pieces here and there. Still super inconsistent.
Same, man.
We'll talk about it more in depth.
Yeah, okay.
For sure.
Okay, number two.
Let's do it.
Okay, my number two is Will Chamberlain. Purely, again, everyone, you know, when talking in the totality of careers, people like to, you know, take into account winning and, you know, championships, all the type of stuff. But if we're purely looking at this specific time frame in someone's first 2 years, I actually value winning not less, but I don't grade as harshly if someone doesn't win, because we don't expect you to win in the first 2 years. LeBron never got criticized for not winning in his first 2 years. He didn't get criticized until 2009, 2010, 2011. Which was, you know, 7th, 8th, and 9th year. So we don't really expect guys to win that early on. So I don't hold it against someone if they don't. And if you just, again, I'm not a end-all, be-all guy when it comes to stats. But let me just read, I mean, Will's stats, I mean, for his whole career, they're insane. But as a rookie, he averaged 37.6 points per game, 27 rebounds, 2 assists, Just incredible. He won the scoring champion. He was the scoring champion and the rebounding champion both his first year and his second year. He was an All-Star Game MVP. And then his second year, again, by the way, both of his first 2 years, he averaged over 46 minutes a game. So, like, not load managing. No, taking the second night of a back-to-back off. No disrespect to Kawhi, but like if he load manages after having these last 4 months off, I will roll my eyes up to the ceiling. Will's second year, 38 points a game, 38.4 points a game, 27.2 rebounds, and like I said, scoring champion and the rebounding champion in each of his first 2 seasons. Again, the 2 first team NBAs both those years. Needless to say, 2 All-Star games. Needless to say, won an MVP his second year, as well as an All-Star Game MVP. So, who is your number two?
Zevin, my friend, we agree on one.
Oh my goodness!
Will Chamberlain at number two.
When I first started. Okay.
Yeah, no, you've already kind of said a lot of it. I'll just sort of add on a little bit. His first season, 5th best single season scoring average, 2nd best single season rebounding average in NBA history. 1 MVP, like you said, and you mentioned the whole not winning thing and how we don't hold against it, and I totally agree with you on that. But he did almost single-handedly take the Bill Russell Celtics to 6 games that year. Yep. In the second round of the playoffs. In year two, he had the 3rd best scoring season and the best rebounding season in NBA history. And he was responsible for more than 30% of his team's points and more than 30% of his team's rebounds.
It's so insane.
Yep. I mean, almost no one has ever carried such a heavy workload for their team immediately upon entering the league. And he did it, and he did it well. And
he did it unconscionably, extraordinarily well.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Go ahead.
It's pretty remarkable just how much more dominant he was than everybody else, not just on the Warriors, but kind of in the league. So.
Absolutely. All right. Do you want to give your number one before me, because in case we have the same number one also?
Let's do that. All right. Number one, can I get a drum roll? I'm going with Wayne Gretzky.
Ah, man. Me too.
I'll just add a few things. Like, just this is one where just the numbers speak for themselves. 301 points, 195 assists, 24 playoff points in 12 games, won the Hart Trophy both years, won the Art Ross Trophy in his second year, tied for it the first year, but lost it on like a technicality with Marcel Dion.
Well, because he scored more goals. So if you sign points, you can give it to him, score more goals.
That's exactly what happened. So then, I mean, he was already the league's most dominant player the second he entered the league. He was obviously the most hyped prospect of all time, and beyond lived up to it within his first few years.
He broke the record for most points in the history, which he went on to break in his second year. The thing that I think is most noteworthy, he won the MVP in his first and his second year. So he won two MVPs his first 2 years. Those two were the first of eight straight MVPs. And I know we're not grading for what comes after, but the fact that he was that elite right away speaks volumes. Again, having two of the top 30 seasons in NHL history in your first 2 years is tremendous. It's incredible. I'm not surprised that we have the same number one. Any more thoughts to add on him or to be honest?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, eight straight MVPs. I think the Art Ross Trophy that he won in his second year was the first of seven or eight in a row as well. I mean, people were calling him the great one before he ever even played in the NHL. And then he kind of just like said, and then he almost did better than that, if that makes sense. You know, I mean, like he had the most expectations of anyone that anyone's ever had, and then Denman did better than that. Like
he was so good that the whole league retired his jersey.
Yeah, I mean,
he has 61 records and 62 if you count having the record for the most records. So, which I always love to say that last part, the record for the most records.
He would be the NHL's all-time leader in points if he had never scored a goal. He's the all-time leader in points.
Yep, he's more assists. Yep, which is just.
Mm-hmm.
He is a stake. I know people in America aren't big on hockey, but he definitely has a stake for being the best,
mm-hmm.
The greatest athlete of all time. He no doubt.
And here's the thing: in the NBA, there's at least some debate over who the GOAT is. In NFL, there's some debate over who the GOAT is. MLB, some debate. NHL, no debate.
No,
none. Zero.
Yep.
That's kind of all there is to say on that.
Right. And then, but before we sign off, really quick. Is Ovechkin going to error? Which is more likely? Is Ovechkin to pass Gretzky on the all-time goals list, or LeBron to pass Kareem on the all-time scoring list?
Out of those two, I think there's a good chance both happen. I think LeBron is slightly more likely, but I think I would lean that way too.
Yeah, I would lean that way too. All right. Well, this was really fun. We had quite the winding podcast today.
This is a top five segment. We'll have to revisit this.
Yeah, this is really good. They said this is a top five segment.
Maybe.
Oh, man.
We'll have to do a lot more segments before we have a top five segments list. So,
I would say this is the top one segment, but I appreciate the pun, whether it was accidental or not. Okay, we'll put the graphic below, but we're going to sign off. Everyone, please stay safe out there. And if you wouldn't mind, give Alex a follow on Twitter, at AlexHutton35. That's Alex. HUTTON 35, and then follow me on Twitter at ZSHUST9. That's ZSHUST and the number 9. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great rest of your day. Have a great rest of your week. And keep social distancing, and you know, don't sneeze in each other's faces. So,
with that,
stay well and stay safe out there, everybody.
Take care, everybody, and goodbye.